Broadcasting live from beautiful, historic Marion, Ohio, it's Now with Scott Spears on WWGH 107.1 FM. Call Scott live on the air anytime at 740-383-9944. No topic is too big or too small. I'm your announcer, the man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. And now, here's your host, Scott Spears.
Thank you, man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. Scott Spears back with you here Tuesday, December 28th, 2021, 14 and a half minutes past the hour. And it sounded like my mic was a little off kilter there. Hold on. You know, you take a little break for the holidays, and this is what happens to you. You have a little bit of mic trouble. Okay, I think we're back to normal there. Now, I did want to let everybody know that Voice of a People with Linda Sims will not be on this week. She's taking a little vacation she was off last week during Christmas week, and she'll be off this week during New Year's week, but she will be back next week. And it's great to be back this morning. We thank Mary Ellen Withrow for joining us this morning. What a great lady she is. We will have to get her back very, very soon because it's endlessly fascinating to talk to Mary Ellen, not just about politics, but life in general. What a great life she has led. And I always tell people she's really one of the most gracious people with her time, and just her presence in the studio is always a lot of fun. She's a fun person to talk to, a fun person to interview, and always fun to be around. So glad to have her in, and maybe we'll get her back very, very soon to come on with us and talk about a few more things. Now, one thing I wanted to talk about this morning as we get underway here back from the holiday break. You know, a long holiday break always puts you in a little bit of discombobulation as you come back to the studio. And after our holiday break, boy, it was an interesting day. For those of you who didn't listen Friday because of being busy with Christmas Eve or whatever it might have been, you might notice that this morning we are not doing the Geraldo Journal. Now, this is a journal that we did for 100 days here on WWGH Radio. It started back on September 16th, 2021, and guess what? On December 24th, it all wrapped up because on Friday morning at 12:15, Geraldo, I guess it'd be Friday afternoon at 12:15, Geraldo appeared on this show for 45 minutes. And I want to thank everybody who came up to me and said it was a great interview. I heard back from so many people who must have been listening on Christmas Eve morning who said they enjoyed the interview. It was a great interview. They all wanted to know how it finally came to be that Geraldo would be on the show. Just a lot of very positive response from that interview, and I'm glad you were able to take the ride with us. Now, one thing I do want to say, one of the reasons we did this journal was because, if you go back to September 16th, the number one question people always ask me when I go out and speak somewhere or I see them somewhere, they say, how do you get those guests? How do you get those guests like Phil Donahue and Bill Cosby and state senators and gubernatorial candidates and people like that? And really, it's just luck, I guess, in a way. So I certainly think Geraldo Rivera for coming on Friday after our 100-day journey, our 100-day Geraldo journal. And apparently he will be back very soon. He invited me up to Cleveland on Friday, and we'll do an interview in person. So no more Geraldo Journal. Aren't you happy about that? And again, we thank Mary Ellen Withrow for being on in hour number one this morning. And now we have our monthly visit with another one of my favorite people. Boy, it seems like it's been a long time since we talked to him last. It's only been a month, but with Christmas and everything going on, Thanksgiving, so on and so forth, it can seem like a long time. It's a pleasure to welcome to these microphones as we wrap up the year 2021, Mayor Scott Schertzer. Mayor, how are you?
Well, good morning to you, Scott, and your listeners. Thanks for having me on today.
How were your holidays?
Well, you know, the holidays are a lot different now that your children get older. You're not putting together toys and Barbie playhouses, and the toys are not noisy. In fact, there's no toys at all. So it's clothes and gift cards when your children get older. So it's a strange transition into this new phase of my life with my kids, but I absolutely love it.
Do you look back at those days when they were younger and miss them at this time of year?
There's no doubt about it. I mean, you know, that's the holidays are a special time for many families across Marion, and unfortunately, the holidays are sometimes a very sad time for many families across the Marion community. So that's why we do things like the Peanut Push and Christmas Clearinghouse, and we have a very generous and giving community, and we have for many, many years. So I think we all want to bask in the benefits and the glow of the Christmas holiday season.
You know, Mayor, last Tuesday, I believe it was the 22nd, whatever day that was, Ohio had its highest day of COVID diagnoses in the history of the pandemic, dating back to March of 2020. Did that surprise you in any way?
You know, unfortunately, it did not. I think when history is written about 2021, at least the local history here in Marion and in the Marion community, the top story is going to be the pandemic and COVID-19. And it'll be interesting, and whether it's 10, 20, 50 years from now, what the history will look like when somebody picks up that journal, that Marion Star in the Marion County Historical Society, and says, what were those people thinking back then? Why didn't they just get the damn shot?
So you're really, that's a strong statement. You're to that point on this.
Look, I have a simple philosophy. At least I think it's simple. It's really live and let live. I don't want to force anybody to get it. I don't like the fact that there's court hearings and rulings right now on forced vaccinations. I think that's a horrible way to go. But I'm perplexed by why you wouldn't do something that is going to protect you. We do things all the time in our lives that protect ourselves and our families. We've done those things all our lives, and many of those things have been imposed upon us by our government, usually the federal government, sometimes the state government, but it's done to protect us. And now we have this resistance to doing anything that will protect us. So I guess I have to move into this live and let live mode. If you don't want to get it, okay, it's your choice. But if you do get it, don't criticize that do and don't criticize that don't decide to get the shot. I think we've all seen far too many people that I know are dying from COVID-19 or complications from COVID-19. And, you know, you get these deathbed confessionals saying, gee, why was I so stubborn? Why didn't I just get the doggone shot and I wouldn't be here? And then 5 days later, somebody dies.
Being the student of history that you have been, so you think history will look very unfavorably at this time?
I can't imagine that it would look favorably upon us and those who chose to protest the vaccine and give in to the, I don't know, the wild accusations and allegations that are often spewed through social media. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can't imagine.
Why do you think in the time we live in, and we're still living in that time even as we have this conversation, that we don't get that? Well, we get it 20, 30 years later when we look at the newspaper archives and old radio broadcasts and old television broadcasts, but we never get it while it's going on.
Well, you know what? You and I were raised in an era where it's almost an instantaneous gratification society, and social media has fed right into that. I can go on social media and find something that validifies, that verifies my belief, even though my personal belief may be skewed, whether it's political information, scientific information, you name the category. you can find something on social media to support what you think is true. And then when you do that, it validates, you know, your thoughts on what truth really is. So I don't have an answer. Sociologists, psychologists, historians will ultimately answer that question for us someday, even though we might not have that answer at our fingertips now.
Talking about specifically Marion County here, because that's where we are, with our vaccination rate still 4%, depends on what numbers you look at on what day, below 50%, and not changing a whole lot, really, in the last 6 months, what's 2022 going to be like? Is there going to be any change? Because it seems like we're at the point, if people aren't going to get it, they've been offered $100 gift cards, they've been prompted by deaths in their family, it certainly is available for free, and the numbers aren't going above 46-47% in this county. Are we ever going to be able to say, okay, we're done with that now?
Yeah, that's a great question, and I fear the answer is no. Nothing much is going to change. Now, I was listening to something the other day, I think, on, I don't know if it was NPR. I was in the car, so it might have been NPR. But they say that, you know, once there is a push, a really kind of a social media, a mainstream media push to educate the public on the Omicron variant, that vaccination rates do tick up. So, you know, there is some hope that here in Marion that the vaccination rates will tick up, and that's what we all want. But I don't know. It seems as if so many people have just resolved themselves to living with the coronavirus, the pandemic, and yet we all complain about, you know, Ohio State canceled another basketball game. You know, I'm a huge Buckeye fan, football and basketball. How devastating would it be for Buckeye fans to have the Saturday football game canceled because of the pandemic and positive vaccination rates within the football organization? That you know, to stop that, we need to get more people vaccinated. To get back to what one might call normal, we have to get more people vaccinated. And again, I don't like the heavy hand of any government, you know, forcing people to do that.
You know, I believe you were on with us maybe just days into the first week of this pandemic back in March of 2020. And I remember there was talk from everybody that we will get through this. We will get through this. Well, 3 months shy of 2 years at this point, what do you say now, knowing how this has all played out for a year and a half?
Well, I think it's going to be a lot longer for us to get through it. Clearly, it's already been longer to get through it. You know, look, as Americans, we're some of the most resilient people in the world. You know, ultimately, I think we will. Something will happen. I don't know what that something is. But we will get through this pandemic. But, you know, I don't know, maybe it becomes more like the flu that afflicts America every year. That would be getting through it better than what we're getting through it right now.
You know, to some degree, and the last question here on the pandemic, but it still is obviously a major story. When we were growing up, there were tabloids, there were magazines, there were ways to get information that wasn't always exactly on the spot. Sometimes newspapers even did that, editorial columns. Why is it, what a lot of people don't understand about this vaccine is, let's say you read something on the internet, and we have maybe internet a culprit in this in a way. Let's say you read something that says, don't get the shot. Why would, when it comes to medical advice, why wouldn't you just call your doctor? You obviously trust your doctor, or why is he your doctor? And see what he says.
Exactly, and I don't know the answer to your question, but, you know, comparing tabloids in the 60s, 70s, 80s, and even into the 90s, now we have a device that we can wake up the first thing in the morning and have access to so much information at our fingertips. That information doesn't necessarily mean it's right it doesn't mean it's wrong either. But I think more people have worldwide access at their fingertips to justify whatever it is that they want to believe. We didn't have that growing up. So, you know, it was interesting. I came home after council last night, and I'm flipping through the movie channels, you know, Netflix, Hulu, et cetera, and I came across the movie from, I think it was 1997, and it was called Conspiracy Theory. I don't know if you remember it or your listeners remember it, but I wanted to watch that movie last night to see what a conspiracy theory was and what view Hollywood had of a conspiracy theory in the late 1990s. And it was dramatically different than the conspiracy theorists that we hear and see about today. So in what is that? Almost 30 years, less than 30 years, 25 years or something, the thought process on conspiracies and conspiracy theorists has changed so much. And the reason I think it's changed is because of internet and social media. But we can't blame social media because we are the ones who make the choice to believe what we read and see on social media.
Before we get to the year that was in the Marion, that was in Marion and the year that will be, I want to ask you, because we've had a little more time than last time we spoke, to kind of look at the November elections here locally, which was essentially really a localized election in the state of Ohio in areas. With the Democrats having a really bad night on election night, have you been able to surmise or coalesce in your mind what happened there any better than back in November when we spoke?
Yeah, I think it's voter turnout. I think when you look at such low numbers for what we call an off-year election, which this year was, so few people chose the leadership in Marion City government that the vast majority of the population didn't even engage in the process or voice their opinion at the ballot box on the leadership of political leadership in Marion City Municipal Government. So I don't know how you get more people to turn out at the polls. You know, some will say go negative, some will say go positive, and, you know, there's all kinds of thought processes out there on how you turn out those voters. Certainly, the scandals that we have been watching over the past almost 2 years in the Marion City Auditor's Office, it didn't drive out more voters. In fact, it may have suppressed voters, and I don't know that for sure, but I think a higher voter turnout is what is needed. And I'd just be happy to see a higher voter turnout. And sure, I want my political party to have more victories, just as the other party wants theirs to have more victories. But I'd be happy with more turnout and more people voicing their opinion through the ballot box. And we just don't see that here locally.
With the landscape of where we have come in Marion and the landscape of where we are in the state right now, not that this can't change in the next couple years, but has it started to impact your political thoughts on your future in politics at all?
Well, you know, that's an interesting question. I don't know if it has. Maybe that's something that once I'm out of politics, once I've said, you know what, I've served my community, it's time to step down, time to move on, time to let somebody else, maybe I'll do a post-analysis of my tenure in Marion municipal government and Marion politics, and I can better answer that question. But, you know, everything in our lives that happens has a certain amount of influence over us. You know, you think differently as a young man, in my case, before I had a wife and two kids. So my wife and two kids have ultimately influenced my thought processes in politics over the past, you know, 21 years that I've been married now. So, yeah, so I'm sure it does to an extent, but to break it down, I haven't done that. No, I have a job to do. I've talked about restoring the city's credibility, and it's not just myself that can do that. It's got to be a team effort. I mean, council's got to be a part of restoring the credibility that we have lost through the Marion City Auditor's Office over the last 2 years. The new city auditor, Randa McGinnis, understands that there's a lot of credibility that needs to be restored, and she and I have had conversations about how we begin to restore that credibility. You know, and the first step is getting the 2020 audit done. We're knocking on the door of 2022, and we don't have a 2020 audit completed yet. And that can, as I've stated many times before, can have some devastating effects upon the city if we don't get that audit completed. And she understands that, and I understand it, and the level of cooperation that has existed in the past 30 days between, you know, the new administration in the Marion City Auditor's Office and my administration it's a whole new level. That's all I can tell you. It's so refreshing to hear Auditor McGinnis say, "You're only 10 feet down the hallway. I'm just going to come down and see you when I need to talk to you." And I'm like, thank you. That's refreshing to hear.
Well, you know, it's interesting. Obviously, that was a major story of 2021, what happened with the city auditor, Robert Landon, and the resignation, and just all the things that went on. In hindsight now, with what you just said, that the new auditor will walk down to your office, that the previous auditor before Robert Landon, certainly you had an amicable relationship with, what was this all about? What happened? Why did everything happen the way it did?
Well, again, I think that is just another one of those questions that we might not have the answers to for a few years down the road. I don't know, honestly. I don't know if it was personalities of different people. Who knows what it is? Was it a heightened state of politics? Sure, I'll buy that. That seems reasonable to say. But, you know, after the election is over, in my experience in Marion municipal government, it's time to get down to doing the work of the people. And we need to do that to the best of our abilities. And if we don't do it to the best of our abilities, then the people will not vote for us the next time we're up for re-election. And we've seen that happen before, too. So I don't have... You're asking me a lot of questions this morning I just don't have answers to. I think time will ultimately answer all your questions, but now is not that time.
One question I do have just in regard to that, when Auditor Landon left office late this year, you had said you were fearful of what you don't know. Do you still think there's a possibility of that, or do we know everything?
I don't know that we do know everything, but I believe that we have an individual in that office now that is that believes seeking the truth and finding the answers is just as important as what I believe it is.
As far as this audit goes, we heard a lot of things last year because of what was going on about possible losses with Marion Area Transit and the Senior Center and federal grant dollars totaling over, I believe it was millions of dollars at that point. Do we know anything more about that now than we did a month ago?
I can tell you that in the 2022 budget, there's about $1.8 million of federal money that support those departments that you just mentioned, as well as police and fire, that if we don't get this 2020 audit completed, it could, and I've always said could, have an impact on those federal dollars coming into those various departments. Do we have a handle on it yet? We'll have a much better handle on it when the 2020 audit is completed.
Do we have any sort of time frame on when that might happen?
Well, I know everybody wanted to have it done, you know, 6 months ago or 3 months ago or even yesterday. So we're already behind any reasonable time schedule that has ever existed when it comes to annual audits. In talking to the state auditors, I'm going to go out kind of on a limb here, but their goal is to get it done as quickly as possible. I do believe they are requesting more information now to prepare the 2020 audit, so it will not be completed in 2021 unless there's, I don't know, some late Christmas miracle that I'm not aware of. But I think we really need to wrap up this audit in the first quarter of 2022.
Being that this is the 2020 audit, and it's not going to be done, likely, in 2021, where is the point where the paperwork has to be filled out for the grant money so it is available in 2022? How does that all work?
Well, right now, as far as I understand, is, you know, that we're good going into 2022 with that money. They're not just, but hypothetically speaking, and these are always dangerous territories to go into, but if we were not able for some reason to complete the 2020 audit, I don't believe the federal government just comes in and yanks the rug out from under you mid-fiscal year. So I'm more concerned about the ramifications going into a 2023 budget cycle. You know, we start doing a preliminary budget in June of 2022 for 2023. We have to get it over to the County Budget Commission, and then we really roll up our sleeves after Labor Day to start putting the next year's budget together. You know, the auditor always puts out kind of a time schedule of when certain things need to be done with the budget. None of that was done this year because of the transitions that took place within the auditor's office. We were way behind. The council had the budget reading last night. They actually amended the budget, so it's the first reading. And so that means on January 1st at noon, the 2022 budget will be voted on by the new council with only one reading under their belt. Normally they have three or two readings, and then they vote on New Year's Day in an election year cycle. So I don't have great concerns about losing those federal dollars in 2022, but again, we've never been faced with a situation like this where we even have to be concerned about not getting an audit completed and jeopardizing those $1.8 million that we just talked about.
It is kind of interesting because the new, am I correct on this, the new council will vote January 1st on that budget?
Correct. And they will reorganize themselves.
Right. So the question, I think, would be, because there will be such a drastic change politically in city council, which, honestly, it didn't used to mean a whole lot politically, what political party you were involved in locally, but now it seems to, for whatever reason. Do you fear that could be an issue, that the group that just put the budget together and had the reading is not going to be the group that's voting on the budget come January 1st?
Well, that's the way the process works, and I've been doing Marion Municipal Government for a number of years now. You know, whether it be on city council or as the mayor. So we'll see what happens on Saturday at noon once the council reorganizes, and generally the only legislative item on the agenda at this point is going to be the 2022-01, which is the budget.
Is there any apprehension, not just with the budget, but many other things going on in Marion in 2022 with the new council, because it has changed quite a bit?
Well, I don't think apprehension, that maybe that's not the word that I would use. Obviously, there's a couple of new council members coming on board that I really don't know anything about. You know, I don't even know. Most council members, not all, but most council members, in my experience, in my 10-year in municipal government, are born and raised Marionites. Now, every now and then, yes, you get somebody that gets elected to council that maybe wasn't born and raised here, but they've lived the bulk of their life here. In fact, maybe 90% or more of their life they've lived here in Marion. We have a couple people that, I don't know that well, but maybe they're new to the community or relatively new in comparison to somebody that was born and raised here, like myself, like many other council members, you know, that were born and raised here. So it'll be a getting to know phase to get to know one another on a personal level. And yes, on a political level and a public policy level, I'm always available to meet with council members. I will tell you that at the beginning of my mayor tenure, that council members did come in and talk to you more often than I've seen them do in the last 2 to 4 years.
As we head into 2022, what would you like to see happen in Marion? What are the biggest problems we're facing, and how do we turn those into positives?
Well, obviously, we've already talked about one at great length, which is the pandemic. I don't know of anybody that's not looking forward to putting 2021 in the rearview mirror and is hopeful that 2022 will be a much better year. Will it be the year that we conquer the pandemic? I don't know. Will it be the year that we get the pandemic under more control? Maybe. I hope so. I'm optimistic. But that's kind of the biggie right now, is trying to get a return to normalcy, as President Harding would have said in his 1920 campaign. So a return to normalcy would be very nice, and then we can focus on the other needs that the community has. I think we need to be careful that we don't expand the role of Marion Municipal Government. You know, our role is clearly defined in the Ohio Revised Code, and I've tried my best not to expand that role and stay within the guardrails and stay within our lanes when it comes to the responsibilities of Marion Municipal Government. There may be an initiative by this new city council. And I say may because nobody has really talked about it openly and publicly yet. They've talked a little bit about it on their campaigns. But a ballot initiative to ask the voters whether they want to go to a charter city. I think that'll be very interesting. In fact, I really look forward to that conversation that will maybe take place in the first quarter of 2022 about a ballot initiative to go from a statutory city, which is what we are now, going to a charter city, which could totally change the makeup of Marion Municipal Government in so many ways that we probably don't even have time to talk about that right now.
Well, do you think that a shakeup could be necessary?
Yeah, I think it could be. I think, yes, I do. I think that might not be a bad idea, at least to have the conversation about the shakeup of Marion Municipal Government in ways that we've never seen before.
What?
And I don't mean at the ballot box by an individual person of a political party that you vote for. The shakeup really comes down to, what does council look like? Are there a three-member council commission like the city of Dayton? Do we stay with 9 voting members and a council president? Do we stay with wards? Do we go all at large, all wards? There's a variety of things that you can do with city council if you are a charter city, but it has to be written into the charter, and the voters have to vote on it and agree that that's how they want their elected official makeup to be.
You know, I want to make sure I go back and catch up on this, because we did get a lot of questions on this. The last time we spoke back in November, it was right after the report came back that there would be no prosecution of Robert Landon, the former city auditor, but that those documents, Ray Grogan, our prosecutor, said that those documents would be turned over to the city, and they could do what they wished with those. Has anything happened there? Is anything going to be pursued at this point? Do you know any more about that?
Well, look, I'm not an attorney, as I've said many times before. The potential violation of state laws have to be separated into misdemeanors and felonies. Turning over that document to the city law director and saying, okay, law director, do what you want with it. If they're felony crimes, the law director doesn't prosecute felony crimes. Only the county prosecutor does. So I don't think we know at this point whether the alleged laws that were broken were felonies or misdemeanors. If they're misdemeanors, yes, the city law director has the discretion to prosecute those. But if they're felonies, and it didn't sound like the county prosecutor is going to prosecute any felony crimes, then I don't know what happens. In fact, nothing happens.
You know, we look at, and you and I are not attorneys, as you've said, but you look at this, and it was a major story this past year. I don't know how many times it ended up on the front page of the local newspaper. When we say that statement right there, that we don't know if they were felony crimes, we don't know if they were misdemeanors, but the county prosecutor has pretty well already said on the recommendation from the special prosecutor from Crawford County that no felony charges are going to come here. Did somebody get away with something here?
I don't know. Again, I think time will tell. Not enough time has passed for us to answer that question either.
When you look back at 2021, how do you remember it? How will you remember it, aside from the pandemic?
Well, I think we've touched on, in my mind, probably the two biggest stories, which is the pandemic, number one, and number two is the complete incompetency of the former city auditor, and the ramifications of that. And those ramifications can be far-reaching, not just into the city's finances, but political ramifications. You know, the makeup of council, I'm sure, was impacted by, you know, those issues within the auditor's office. And then there will be some that we won't be able to see clearly before us right now, but time will give us that clarity.
You know, after the election, I had a chance to speak with some of the Democrats who will still be on council, and they said that at this point, they really don't even have an association with the Democratic Party in Marion because of what happened in the election. Does the party itself need some kind of change?
Well, I think both parties do. I think the days are long gone when you were able to reach across the party line and talk about legislation or policies that impact the constituents that you represent. And because so few people voted in this year's municipal election, you can't craft all your policies around, and I don't remember what the percentage of voters were in Marion City. I think countywide, it was like 20-21%. Believe it was even a bit lower in the city. But you can't create policies for 11 or 21% of the public just because they voted. There's still 80% or more of the public out there that you have to be conscious of when you do public policy and legislative policies.
When we look at the censuses that happen, and the median income of families and people in Marion being fairly low, do you think that a lot of the events and a lot of the legislation that we have in Marion represents the majority or is inclusive of the majority of the Marion people?
I think that anywhere between 95 and 99% of the legislation done by city council in the past 14 years is really nothing more than making sure the government runs smoothly. It's buying a new dump truck for the garage, a new mower for the parks department. It's not the type of more political legislative agendas that you see in the state legislature in Columbus or in the national legislature in Washington, D.C. It's really been about what do we have to do legislatively? Is it a spec and bid for a project that we have to do? It's really the nuts and bolts of legislature 101. So we haven't seen a lot of those political agendas pushed through Marion City Council. Now, one side of the political aisle wants the voters to think that it is, as well as the other side. But when you get right down to it, you don't see a lot of social engineering in legislative policies in Marion Municipal Government. And frankly, I don't think there's any place for that kind of stuff here.
You know, Mayor, I was looking during the holiday time at some events that were going on and some just fun things that go on at the holiday time, and were more back with us this year because of restrictions from the pandemic being loosened a little bit. And I look at prices of tickets and things of that nature, and I think, you know, if you are making $20,000 to $30,000 a year and you have a family, it would be very hard for you to attend these events.
Yeah, I think you're right. But we are seeing wages tick up. We're seeing that the labor force is maybe depressed right now. The unemployment rate for Marion County is under 4%. That's just astonishing to see a 3.9% unemployment in Marion County and still see so many help wanted signs out there. I have two daughters, as you well know, and maybe some of your listeners do. They both came home for Christmas break. They were both able to pick up a part-time job while they're on Christmas break, relatively easy. They didn't get to go back to Whirlpool and work over Christmas break because of some policies that Whirlpool has. But, you know, a lot of times maybe the employer needs to look at some of these policies because there are barriers that the employers actually have thrown up that prevent people from coming in and getting a job. Whether it be Whirlpool or other manufacturers like manufacturing warehousing here in our community, which those are the jobs that generally pay more that you can support a family of four on.
The unemployment rate is low here in Marion. There was an article in the Dispatch earlier this month that talked about how we talk about these help wanted signs, that the federal money that was going to people who were unemployed stopped in Ohio back in July, the extra money. And yet, I think it was somewhere between 2 and 3% of people returned to the job force. The unemployment rate's under 4% in Marion, and there are still help wanted signs everywhere. Where are the people?
Well, they're retiring. If you think about the baby, if you think about the baby boomer generation, they're all about 65 years old now, which is about the time that most people retire because they can get the federal government health benefits. So those baby boomers, that generation is almost nearly all retired now. And they made up such a large part of the workforce, not only here in Marion, but Ohio and across the country. So a lot of times, I think it's because there just aren't enough people to fill the job vacancies that exist. We've been hearing for the past 10 years that automation is going to take away so many of these jobs. I don't know that we've been educating people coming out of high school. I don't know if we've been educating them to prepare to step right into the workforce like they did in my parents' generation. What we've done is we've prepared these last couple generations to, well, you have to go to college. And college is great, but it's not for everybody. So we need to prepare our high school graduating seniors with the skills, with the tools to step right into the workforce. Now, they may need to do an apprenticeship. They may need to go to a place like Marion Technical College or the adult education program at Tri-Rivers. They may need a little extra post-secondary education, clearly, but not everybody needs to go on to a four-year college.
As we get ready to close the door on 2021, it was a very tumultuous year for a lot of people, a tumultuous year in city government, as we have went over here. As you look back, hindsight's always 2020. Is there anything you would have done differently?
You know, it's a bit too early for me to say. I don't know. That's a great question, but I don't know the answer yet. I think maybe yes. I'm trying to take a different approach with the Marion City Auditor's Office, a different approach than what I took with the previous auditor. You know, I've said publicly many times over the past 2 years, you know, that myself and my administration were here to help the former auditor, but we weren't here to do their job. And the same thing holds true now, but, you know, it seems as if the current city auditor is more open to the help that myself and my administration can provide because of the vast institutional knowledge that we possess.
Any New Year's resolutions?
Well, you know what? I think my biggest New Year's resolution is let's put 2021 in the rearview mirror and hope that 2022 is a much better year for all the reasons that you and I have already talked about. And my goal is to continue to work as hard as I have always done as the mayor of the city of Marion.
Mayor Scott Schertzer, always a pleasure to visit with him. Have a happy new year, you and your family and your staff, and we will talk in 2022.
Great. Thank you.
Bye-bye. Thank you. Bye-bye. Mayor Scott Schertzer. All right. Well, we'll be back tomorrow morning for this day. Scott Spears heading for the dugout.
Mother Goose,
oh, what fun it was, and the joy of the children and their parents.